Anyone ever experienced this before? You say something, you put it out there, and all of a sudden, you said it, and you can't take it back. Anyone else with me there? You said it, and now the words are just kind of sitting there heavy. Or maybe someone said something to you, and it shocked you so much that you're thinking, wait, what? Did you just say the thing? And it just kind of sits there. In the back of your mind, you wish you could kind of take it back. But you know, that's just not a possibility. Anyone in here ever have a relationship end? And you have the conversation? And you go through, yet you spend all night discussing, arguing, and it ends. And weeks, months later, maybe years later, you might look back and you think, if only I had said this, or maybe if I just brought up this thing, things could have changed. Maybe you are a parent, and your kids are doing what kids do. They're kind of going in different directions. And you think to yourself, what if I had if I had been a better parent then? If I had just done this thing, if I said this, if I had read that book then? All things could have turned out so differently. And you begin beating yourself up over it. Anyone losing some sleep? You can raise your hand. Me too. Yeah, that one thing that you did a long time ago, or maybe just recently, and it's the one thing that you don't want to think about, but guess what thing always comes up right there in the middle of the night when you're trying to sleep? That thing. And no matter how many sheep you count, before you know it, it's the thing that you're counting over and over and over again. And you can't escape it, can you? Because that's what happens when we experience something called negative regret. It kind of eats you up. And you have all these questions of what ifs. Regret. What do you do with regret? What do you do with these moments where you wonder, what should I have done it differently? And you begin beating yourself up over it. There's whole studies done on regret, and I find it really interesting. Regret is a negative cognitive state in which you replay something over and over again and you beat yourself up for it. Am I the only one in this room that does this? First of all, can we just all admit we do this a little bit? Okay, good. Look around. Look around the room. There are other people as crazy as you. Does that make you feel good? Yeah, you're not actually alone in this. We all go through it. This negative regret, it does a number on you psychologically. And it can get so bad that at some point in time, you may be at the place where you can't even function normally. You can't even do your work normally. It's gotten such a hold of you. Here's something I found really fascinating. 44% of women surveyed in America, they said, we have a tremendous amount of regret. Men, they surveyed the same amount of men, 19%. And I get it, because my wife, she has an amazing memory. She will say, do you remember that time 4 years ago, we were sitting here, you were eating this, and I was eating this, and you said, and I'll be like, man, I don't remember, did I really say that? Yeah, and you also said this, and this, and this, and the waiter's name was this. I'm like, I can't remember what I ate this morning, it's 10 a.m. I can't remember any of it. Regret. And we all handle it a little bit differently, don't we? Regret. Americans are some of the most stressful people in the world. And we carry a tremendous amount of regret, negative regret, everywhere we go. And it does a number on us. We talked about emotionally, psychologically, but as far as your health goes, anyone ever, you don't have to raise your hand, anyone ever get so involved in this cycle of regret that you lose sleep and before you know it, you're sick all the time? Says the guy that's sick. Yeah, it can do a number on your body. Negative regret can do a number on you. It can really mess you up. And so the psalmist, they understood that sometimes you experience regret. Sometimes you do something, you experience something, and you wish you could do it differently. And sometimes you're tempted to beat yourself up over it. And so today we'll delve into this a little bit. The psalmist in chapter 34, he says this: "Many are the afflictions of the righteous, for the Lord delivereth him out of them all." Now, this word afflictions, that's not a great translation. The translation in the Hebrew, it actually means to misstep, to step in the wrong direction or a direction that you wish you hadn't stepped. It's having the decision and you decide, well, I could go this way or that way. Well, there's chocolate, I'll go this way. And you take the misstep, right? You go a misdirection. And those are the things you will look back on and be tempted to have a lot of regret over. My friend Steve, he works in the medical industry, and he sells different devices to people in different hospitals, and he makes a fairly good living. And Steve told me in the early 1980s, he and some of his friends who were really good at selling things, they came together, and there was this guy that was going to share this pitch with them. And this guy came in, and he said, "I've got the next thing. I want you guys as the beginning people to start selling these. It's going to be huge." And so this guy came in and he says to them, there's this device, we're calling it the heart stent. And we think almost all of the medical field soon will begin using these. And he explained what it was. And my friend thought, yeah, that sounds good. But a friend of his who's in the room, who's wise and he'd had years of experience, he said, hey, man. Let's not get crazy. This may not be what you think it's going to be. This may just be a fad. It may pass. Let's think about it. Let's take some time on it. My friend decided to take this man's advice. And he lost a lot of money. And then years later, he found out that that guy, he went back and got in on the deal the day of. And my friend Steve, who's doing well now, he said he looks back on that and he has this holy vengeance. And he's got all these narratives of what he thinks really happened that day. He was doing this and this and this and he was trying to get me. So angry. In Psalm 35, the writer has a friend. And this friend turns out to be an enemy and misuses and mistreats him. And I think Psalms 35 is pretty hilarious because it's the things that you and I don't like to say out loud, but we think about the people who wrong us. Here's some of the things that the writer in the Psalms says about that person. Lord, pull out the spears. Let's get him. Right? Let them be confused and frustrated. Let them be driving on I-5 and have a flat tire, Lord. In your holy name, curse their vehicle. Let their Prius run out of gas. So good. Do it, Lord, please. He deserves it. God, persecute them, he says in chapter 35. And then my favorite, may their souls die in pits. Can you imagine if you said that out loud? You think it. You said it out loud. What do you think of Randall? I wish his soul would die in a pit. Man, that's some anger, brother. You got some anger. Sometimes people do us wrong. Sometimes things go the wrong direction. But here's the thing. Sometimes we need to learn how to let it out. We need to learn how to let it out. Sometimes you're angry. I belong to a church. I grew up in a church in the Midwest when I was told anger is bad. Don't be angry. You show anger, you're going against God's will. Because anger is a bad thing. And so I walked around a lot like this. How you doing, Tony? Happy Sabbath! Someone would do me wrong. I'd hold it in. And I would get so frustrated. But the writer in this psalm, the writer's writing this hip-hop song of anger. It's just writing it out because it's got to go somewhere. And so the writer puts it all out there. A couple months ago, I had this meeting that I was so frustrated with. And I remember getting into my Acadia. It's like perfect white person suburbia transportation. I get in, I start cranking up Eminem. You gotta lose yourself in the rhythm. And I'm starting to turn it up louder. And I'm getting angrier. I'm singing it out loud. And I'm just feeling good because I'm angry. And I get up to the light. And I'm just singing it. I'm ready to start crying. And I look over and there's this group of white girls laughing at me in the car next to me. And pointing at the awkward middle-aged man singing Eminem. Of course, turn it down. They leave, I crank it back up, I'm heading home. I'm angry. Sometimes we gotta let out some of that anger, don't we? Let me ask you this. When you are frustrated, when you are angry, when you have these emotions, where does it go? What do you do with it? I know some people, when they're angry, they try to hold it in. And I'll be honest with you, it comes out. You think you're being tricky, it comes out. And we avoid you when it comes out. We see it growing, the volcano starts shifting, and we're like, oh no, it's going to erupt. What do you do? What do you do with all that anger, that energy? Because it's normal to have it. Maybe go to the gym. You're lifting the weights. Joe Oswald's cranking it out. He's only got 5 pounds on each side, but he's cranking it out. Holy zealous. Or you're a runner, and you're just running, and you've been running for like 8 hours. You don't even know where you are. You have to call your wife to pick you up. You got it out, though. That anger. Maybe you're someone that needs to just write, and you write and write, or you write songs, or you go to the concert, and you sing along with other angry people, and you just get it out. How do you get it out, that anger? Because the reality is that emotion will come out somewhere. And you all have been there, haven't you? You're sitting at the dinner table, and all of a sudden, poor Kimberly brings up, hey, John, would you please pass the peas? Peas? Are you kidding me? Like all of a sudden, oh, this is like World War IV, because we're already going toward three. Peas, and it just comes out. It just comes out. It's a mess. If we're not careful, our emotions will go somewhere. And the psalmist says, write it out. Write it out. Get it out. Get it out there. Something interesting happens, though, after you get the emotion out. You admit you're angry. You sing the hip-hop song. You get laughed at by a bunch of girls in a car. Whatever it is you do, when you get it out, something happens next that the psalmist shares. For as for me, when they were sick, my clothing was sackcloth. When you were mourning, you put yourself in sackcloth. I humbled my soul with fasting, and my prayer returned into me my own bosom. Watch this. The individual here went from anger fully, and then they went into a state of sadness. They allowed themselves to feel sad. I'm a man, in case you didn't know. And at an early age, I was told this. You're a man, and you don't show emotion. You're a man, and you don't get sad. Right? Because that's weakness. You're a man. The worst thing you could possibly do in public is cry. You're a man. Men are tough. We don't experience those emotions. And I'll be honest with you, that has hurt me in so many ways growing up. I didn't have a father who told me, Tony, just come here. Let's just get it out. Let's talk about it. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to be hurt. And the message we are sending to our young men all over this country is this. You should not allow yourself to feel sad or have emotions, because that's not strength. It's weakness. And what happens to me and my friends, my male friends, is this. We go from anger, we skip sadness and depression, and we can't accept it. And so we stay in a perpetual state of just being angry. And we don't know what to do with it. And our souls are so wound up. All we needed was someone to say this. It's okay to feel hurt. It's okay to acknowledge that you are experiencing pain. It's okay to cry. And for the men in this room, I want to say this emotion, admitting that the thing hurt you, is actually a sign of strength. Pretending it didn't, pretending that you're strong, is a sign of weakness. It's a sign of weakness. The psalmist goes on, says we have to learn to mourn. And when we learn to mourn, we begin to allow ourselves to hope for something more. And I love this, as one mourns for their mother. Kason, the other day, we were skateboarding. And of course, dad forgets to put on the elbow pads and the knee pads. So we're going, and he biffs it really good. And he's laying in a puddle on the ground. He's crying. And me, I walk over, I grab him, I'm like, hey, buddy, good job. He's like, he's crying. He's like, Dad, it's bleeding. I said, yeah, that's a good strawberry. Gonna be an awesome scar, buddy. My son said this. It was so beautiful. He said, I want mommy. You're not good at this. And he's right. Because sometimes in our moments of sadness, in our moments of hurt and pain and brokenness, sometimes calling out is a step toward wholeness. When you can actually muster the courage, because it takes courage to say, it hurt me, it was painful, that thing, I didn't deserve it. And you call out and say, I need help. It's like a child calling out to mom. And that's not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of strength. Except that it hurts. Then we can begin moving forward. There's this verse in Psalms. And it goes like this. Fill my heart with joy. I don't want that one. Fill my heart with joy. When their grain and new wine abound. In peace I will lie down and sleep. For you alone, Lord, make me dwell in safety. How many of you could use a little bit more abundant joy? Let me ask you a better question. How many of you could use a little more sleep? Yeah. When you sleep, you have joy in the morning. And I think there are things that keep us from sleep. And I think when we learn to follow these steps that the psalmist gives us, when we learn to understand, yes, there's anger, experience it fully, be present to it, sing the song, yell if you need to yell, punch the punching bag, do what you need to do. But then understand, acknowledge that you're feeling hurt, that there's sadness, there's some depression. Once you do this, you can move into acceptance. You can take responsibility for the present, and you can move into wholeness. That's what it looks like when we begin to follow what the psalmist says about regret. And so today I wonder, are any of you struggling with regret? Any of you needing to punch the punching bag? Any of you needing to get the thing out? Any of you needing to sit on this thing? Do you need to just cry? Do you need someone to talk to you can trust? Do you need to finally accept that it happened? Accept your part in it, take responsibility, and move on? I wonder how many of you are with me in this. I want to close on this. A friend of mine, Robert, he and his brother Tim, their dad wasn't doing so well. Tim actually moved to Texas, and Robert lived close to dad there in Ohio. And Tim is the poster boy for like the good son. He's the good son that calls all the time. Robert isn't. He's the one that every once in a while will call when he needs something. But mom died, and it left dad alone. And Tim, he tried to make as many visits as he could, but Robert was right there. And Robert was so busy, dad would call and say, "Hey, do you want to go to the game?" He loved baseball. Rarely went to the games. Barely spent time with his dad. And Robert got a phone call, and Tim said, "Hey man, dad is not doing well. And I hate to harp on you again, but he's only got so much time, and he has serious dementia. Robert, would you visit him? I think you're going to regret it." So Robert said, yeah. Robert started, though, to finally go visit his dad. And the pain of visiting his dad was difficult, because dad was different, couldn't remember well. But the more Robert visited dad, the more closely connected he felt. And Robert said he would watch games with his dad on Sundays there in the hospital bed. He would spend time with dad playing cards, whatever he could do. Brought the kids over periodically. And he said finally one day, he felt this overwhelming sense he needed to apologize. And so Robert, he held his dad's hand. And he said, "Dad, I'm really sorry. I'm sorry that I wasn't the son that you wanted me to be. I'm sorry I didn't visit more. I'm so sorry I didn't call you. I'm so sorry I wasn't the son that you needed me to be." And dad, he kind of got up and he kind of looked at Robert strangely. He said, "Tim, you live in Texas. I'm so happy you visit me. I love you and your brother so much. You are both on your own paths. And I love both of you dearly, and I'm so proud of both of you." Robert's dad wasn't holding anything against him. And so Robert didn't need to hold that either. And today, I don't know what kind of regrets you have, but if you have them, if you're human, I might ask you to consider going through what the psalmist does. Consider letting the anger out, accepting that you are feeling sadness and pain and brokenness. Call out, seek wholeness, and then begin walking in it. You're not alone, and freedom and wholeness is right there in our grasp. You don't have to feel negative regret anymore. You can walk in wholeness. No one is holding that against you. May God bless you today in a special way on the Sabbath.